All right.
All right.
Hi, guys.
Welcome back
to the Flick Chicks podcast.
I'm Jane.
And I'm Allison. We're doing low voices.
We're doing today. ASMR.
ASMR. I was thinking about that because Jane got a hydro flask.
I did.
So, like, it's pretty much just me now that doesn't have a hydro flask, but I refuse to get one.
I like cold water, okay?
Well, I don't like cold water.
Yeah,
like,
we discussed this.
I like room temp water.
And you know how I feel about it.
It's better for your throat. That's all I'm going to say.
Well, you know,
all I'm gonna say
makes
is,
me feel better, cold water.
All I'm gonna say is it's better for your body to drink room temp water, and you'll get used to it. When you have cold water, you can't drink it so fast because it hurts your body. You're like, ooh.
Oh, I love drinking. I like the
you
rush.
Like the hurt?
Yeah.
I don't like the hurt. I'm not room temp water all the way, baby. I've got a Brita water filter.
I like the thrill of it.
It's just like that water bottle's $50.
Yeah.
It's just like, I don't know. I spent $13 on my water bottle, I think.
Nice.
But also every like 3 months I have to spend $10 on a new filter, so.
Yeah.
Mine definitely adds up. But also filtered water.
That's true. But I have a separate Brita filter in my fridge.
Oh, yeah, I just drink tap water and then use the... Mm-hmm. I don't really mind drinking tap water, but some water tastes weird some places.
Yeah.
And so I like tap the filter, because it makes all water taste exactly the same.
That's true.
Which is nice. I don't really know how much it actually filters, but it makes all my water taste the same.
The water bottle debate.
The water bottle debate rages on.
How are you, Allison?
I'm pretty good. I'm very tired.
Yeah, it's the end of the week.
Yeah, Jane and I are both... now working full-time jobs because we graduated from college.
Yeah.
And I'm working at a bank. It's pretty rough. I'm not going to lie.
Oof.
Oof. Yeah, it's pretty rough.
I'm working at a women's shelter and I love it.
Yeah, Jane's,
and I get paid so much less than her.
Yeah, Jane's working in her field. I get paid more, but I have to work at a bank. So I guess it all evens out, doesn't it? If I was a theater teacher, I'd be kicking your ass right now.
That's so true.
I'd be making so much more.
And doing something you
and
like.
And doing something I like. Maybe Oklahoma will have a spot open up.
Maybe.
Oklahoma is constantly needing teachers.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
And they do not, they're like high school degree, that's almost good enough to get you in.
Really?
Oh yeah, they're, but I mean.
That makes a lot of sense given my education in the Oklahoma public school system.
Yeah, I don't know if you know this, but I think Oklahoma has, like, the lowest paid teachers of any state entire country.
I did know that. It used to be Mississippi, and then we took the,
Mississippi was like, okay, we'll give you a raise. We don't want to be like Oklahoma. And the last year or something, I think it was, the teachers all did a huge strike, and it was like a month or something.
My sister-in-law is a lawyer, and she helped, like, work with those teachers in getting involved.
Mom's side of the family is from Oklahoma, and my entire family is full of teachers. Literally, there's only, like, two people in my entire family that aren't teachers.
Interesting.
And most of them are teachers in Oklahoma, so they all did, or at least, like, they work in the school system. So they all did the strike, all did the walkout, but they're also the people that told me, like, you know, they'll pretty much get you alternative certified in anything. Pretty much you can teach whatever you want, whenever you want, and you can teach it. Because they're just so... Also, there's a grant through the state that will pay for part of your master's and or reimburse you for your loans if you teach there for 5 years.
Yeah, I think I've heard about that.
And it's a lot, too. It's not just like, oh, here's $5,000. It's like a lot. I remember it's like a lot of money for the grant.
Yeah.
So, kind of considering it.
Yeah.
To be honest.
Definitely.
But we'll see. I don't really know what's going on anymore. I'm kind of... Every day is a bore.
Yeah, every day kind of feels the same a little bit.
Yeah, before, like, honestly, here's what I've learned about myself. I can totally not go anywhere ever and be 100% fine. What I learned about myself is I did not go stir crazy really at all in quarantine. Mm-hmm. I mean, I would have liked it if, you know, things were open because I do like to go places with my friends, but I didn't miss working. I didn't miss school. I never once was I like, oh, I just wish I could go back. Like, I mean, I wish I could go back to school for, like, the social aspect and for the graduation aspect, but never was like, oh, class. I miss class. I was never like, oh, I miss going to work every day. Like,
yeah, I don't get that.
Some people are like that. I was like, I can get busy. I can find stuff to be busy with. I'm year four Stardew Valley. It's fine.
I started a Nancy Drew PC game today.
Oh my god.
Midnight in Salem is what it's called. The graphics are terrible. Mm-hmm. It's so much fun.
Was it a PC?
Yeah.
Wow.
It's so much fun. I love it. It's like a mystery game. I love puzzle mystery games.
It's so exciting.
I mean, it's like kind of for kids, I guess, but like, it's for everyone.
It's for everyone.
It says like, I think it's like usually 13 plus is what it says.
Oh, so you're plus 13.
Yeah. I played it when I was really young though, when I was younger than 13. So.
So I feel like we're talking about calming things, sort of.
But this movie is the exact opposite of calming.
This movie, like, if you're a nervous person, I would maybe stay clear of it.
Or maybe just read the Wikipedia, like, entry before.
Yeah. Be aware that what you're going into is not an easy watch.
No, it's one of the most intense movies I've ever seen.
Literally so stressful. Like, beginning to end.
Ugh.
Okay. Okay.
Okay, so what we're doing is 2019's Safdie Brothers.
Oh, I don't know.
Safdie Brothers, I think. Uncut Gems, starring Adam Sandler. It's the Safdie Brothers.
Safdie.
Safdie.
There's also some other. There's the guy that he's in Atlanta and he's in.
Sorry to Bother You.
And Sorry to Bother You and Get Out. Yeah. What's his name?
Yeah. I just told someone his name just earlier. I was talking about him.
Y'all better show me this guy. Lakeith Stanfield?
Yes, he's excellent.
Yeah, and also
Idina Menzel.
Idina Menzel, isn't it?
She's really good, too. Everyone is really good in this. My favorite, though, is the girl who plays Julia.
Oh, yeah, she's super good. And she's brand spanking new to the acting
world. Yeah, this is her debut film.
I shouldn't say she's new to the acting world. She's probably been in the acting world for a long time. Her name is Julia Fox.
Wow.
She's very pretty. Look at that.
Yeah, she's great. She's really good. Gorge. She is.
Yeah, so I guess I'll read the plot.
Okay. I hope you guys have watched this.
Strap in. Definitely will ruin it if you haven't. In 2010... Ethiopian Jewish miners retrieve a rare... Already that first sentence.
It's like, what?
Ethiopian Jewish miners retrieve a rare black opal from the Wailo mine in Africa. Shifting to 2012, gambling addict Howard Ratner runs KMH, a jewelry store in New York City's Diamond District.
It opens with him getting a colonoscopy.
Yeah, okay, the opening. Something we should definitely talk about.
Definitely talk about.
I immediately was like, what is this movie?
Yes.
It felt like, okay, you're in health class. Flashback, you're in health class. Mm-hmm. It's your seventh grade year.
I know where you're going with this.
They're showing you, like, an informational video on either bullying or sex or sexual harassment. One of those three, okay? And the intro song that plays as the beginning of Uncut Gems is starting. Basically what happens, it zooms super close into the black opal, and then it, like, goes through the black opal, and it's, like, weird colors, and then it's, like, a body, and then it's, like, his ass. And all the while, like, this weird 80s Doctor Who type informational video that you watch in middle school music is playing, and it's like, wah.
It's so bizarre. It's like a journey through time, and you come out of Adam Sandler's rectum.
It's really weird. So immediately I was like, what is going to happen?
I know, this movie, I will say, never once was I bored.
Mm-mm.
Ever.
The Ethiopian Jewish miners, I wasn't that into it, but I understand it's an establishing scene.
Yes.
So you're still interested, but then you're pretty much immediately skyrocketed into, so what is this movie going to be? Because this just said it was 2010, and now I'm hearing music that has legitimately not been produced since the 80s. at least the 80s. And
so where are you going with this?
Yeah, so, like, what is going to happen? And then it's Adam Sandler, and he has the stupidest glasses on that you've ever seen.
And he has, like, his teeth?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my gosh. It's so hard to explain. You just have to see it.
He has an interesting bite, that's for sure.
Yes.
So, Howard struggles to pay off gambling debts, including $100,000 he owes to Arno, his loan shark brother-in-law. His domestic life is split between Dina, yeah, his estranged wife, who has agreed to divorce after Passover, and his girlfriend Julia, a KMH employee. Howard's business associate, Damani, that's the guy whose name I've already...
Stanfield is his last name.
Yeah.
Lakeith Stanfield,
that's him. Brings basketball star Kevin Garnett...
Played by Kevin Garnett.
Garnett? Garnett. I think that's maybe how you're supposed to pronounce it, but I don't watch...
Played by himself.
To KMH. While Garnett is in the store... I know this is probably Garnett, but I'm going to keep saying Garnett.
We watch Steven Universe,
so I'm going to keep saying Garnett. Is in the store. The rare Ethiopian black opal Howard has ordered arrives. Garnett becomes obsessed with it, insisting on holding on to it for good luck at his game that night.
Very weird.
Yes. He, like, becomes entranced with this opal.
Yeah, it's really interesting.
It's also not that pretty.
No, it's really not.
I mean, it's okay. Don't get me wrong. It's fine. But any, like, gem that's uncut is, like, pretty.
Yeah.
Okay. Howard reluctantly agrees, accepting Garnett's 2008 NBA championship ring as collateral. Immediately after Garnett leaves, Howard pawns the ring.
Unbelievable.
I was immediately like, whoa. And places a six-way parlay on Garnett playing extraordinarily well in that night's games.
Who thinks to do this?
Yeah. Howard wins $600,000, but is ambushed at his daughter's school play by Arno and his bodyguards, Phil and Nico. Arno reveals that he placed a stop on Howard's bet, as it was made with money owed to him.
Mm-hmm.
Phil and Nico strip Howard naked and lock him in the trunk of his car.
So intense.
Forcing him to call Dina for help.
Yeah.
I keep wanting to say
that. That scene is so intense when they're in the car and they're, like, stripping him.
I know, and they're, like, beating him up.
Oh my gosh. This entire movie is just...
Just one after the other.
Yeah.
And it's really weird because there's these really weird semi... Okay, here's the thing. He's Jewish. It's a big deal in the movie, okay?
Yeah.
The fact that they're Jewish is a big deal. And it's, like, every scene that's not intense mafia, like... high baller gambling life is like intense because it's just regular Jewish family life, which is way more intense than anybody else's life. So it's so bizarre because it's just like all the constant, like, there's constant yelling in this movie. This movie never stops yelling, and yet it always has to be yelling. Like, it's like just has to be yelling. And there's so few moments of just, like, calm.
Yeah, very few.
And 90% of the time when it is, it's because he's with his family. And
or because it's, like, sexual.
Yes. And, like, that's not even calm because there's weird tension on both ends. Because, mm-hmm. like, his relationship with his family is so tense because you know he has a girlfriend. But then the times with his girlfriend are so tense because you know he has a family.
Yeah, it's...
So even though they're not screaming, it just feels really... tense.
Oh my gosh, that scene where he sneaks into her house.
I know.
And like,
I really thought she was gonna be cheating
on him. I thought she was gonna be cheating on him too, and I was like, oh, but then like she like
was. But then I was like, oh, she likes him.
She likes him a lot.
I was like, I did not expect that.
Yeah, she really like is in love with him.
I know. Sort of. It's weird.
It's a weird relationship, but like she definitely loves him in some way.
Certainly in a money way.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. So Howard tracks down Damani at a party hosted by The Weeknd.
Played by The Weeknd.
The Weeknd's in this movie. Damani says that Garnett still has the opal, angering Howard. Also, this would anger me too because Damani specifically called him before the party and said, I have the opal.
Mm-hmm.
This is where you can meet me to get the opal.
Yeah.
Yep. But he doesn't have it.
He doesn't have it.
He lied for some weird reason.
Yeah.
I don't understand Damani's actions at all in this movie.
I don't really understand his drive.
I'm like, what's
your end game?
What's your end game, Damani? Like, just to get him in trouble? Because why would you tell, like, I understand if you're like, okay, you're acting out of sorts or whatever, you need to chillax. But when he says, like, why don't you have the opal? Why would you call him and say you have it if you don't have it?
Mm-hmm.
Also, he's your employer.
Right? I know. That whole scene where he, like, walks away from him whenever they're going into the, into the room.
I know.
And he just like walks away from him.
I know. I was like, first of all, he's your employer, and also you have his precious gem.
It's precious gem.
It's precious. It's like supposed to be worth like $1 million, and you're really gonna be like, ugh. I mean, like, granted, yeah, Garnet doesn't need the money. He's just obsessed with the gem.
Yeah.
I mean, he wants to rightfully own it. He does not want to steal it.
Mm-hmm.
So, Howard discovers Julia and the Weeknd snorting cocaine in the bathroom, and thinking Julia had cheated on him, gets into a fight with the Weeknd, which she says she didn't, and technically she didn't.
She didn't. She kept telling him, like,
she said, don't touch me, but they were also flirting really hard.
Really hard.
And she felt his dick through his jeans.
So. Yeah. So, gray area.
It's kind of like, you're like, it is cheating on him, but also he's just your sugar daddy.
Yeah, he has a family.
Yeah, so it's like, I don't really know how much I care that you're cheating on him. Feeling betrayed, Howard demands that Julia move out of his apartment. After an awkward Passover dinner, Dina rejects Howard's plea to give their marriage another chance in a hilarious scene.
It's so intense and funny. Like, even the funny scenes are so intense.
I know. Idina Menzel, such queen. Okay. Garnet returns the oval before the auction and offers to purchase it for $175,000, but Howard refuses, giving the substantially larger appraisal.
Whew.
Just before the auction starts, Howard discovers that the oval has been appraised for significantly less than his initial estimate of $1 million.
This is a crazy scene.
Yeah, so he tries to basically trick them into taking out all the new estimates, and they say, well, we can drop it, but we're not going to give it a new estimate. We're not going to reappraise it or go to the old appraisal. And he gets really mad. So he convinces his father-in-law, Gooey, to bid on the gem to drive the price up. But the plan backfires when Garnet fails to top Gooey's final bid, which is
$190,000.
A furious Gooey gives Howard the opal before Arno, Phil, and Nico assault Howard outside the auction house. Howard returns to KMH bloody and in tears. Julia comforts him and they reconcile. That is, in my opinion, the scene where he's like having a breakdown is one of the best scenes in the whole movie.
I agree.
When he's like,
when he has the tissues up his nose.
Yeah, and he's like really freaking out because he's like, what am I going to do? Like, I'm ruined.
That's a great scene.
Such a good scene. Howard learns that Garnet is still willing to purchase the opal, and as soon as the sale is made, Howard bets the proceeds on a three-way parlay on Garnet having a strong performance.
Oof.
He tells Julia to travel by helicopter to Mohegan Sun to place the bet for him. Julia narrowly escapes as Arno, Phil, and Nico arrive at KMH. The thugs find Howard in his office and threaten him, but he refuses to call Julia and cancel the bet. Furious, the three attempt to pursue her, but Howard locks them in between the store's security doors. Howard watches the game on TV while Arno, Phil, and Nico remain trapped.
Oh my god.
Garnet's Boston Celtics win the game, winning Howard $1.2 million. An ecstatic Howard frees Arno, Phil, and Nico, but Phil, in rage, shoots and kills Howard.
Right in the freaking head.
Arno protests and tries to escape, but Phil kills him as well. Julia leaves the casino with Howard's winnings. Phil and Nico loot the store as the police are called.
Whew. From beginning to end.
I was like, the first time he wins, you're like, he's probably going to win. Like, you think he's going to win.
Yeah.
And he does. But then his bet was canceled by the thugs. So he still can't pay, right? Okay, so the problem is, he can't pay off the money, right? He doesn't have enough money. So he has to bet so he can get the money.
Mm-hmm.
Then he gets it, but it turns out he doesn't have it because they canceled the bet, even though it would have given him enough to pay off his debts. Which, here's the thing, though. Then he sells the opal, right? Now he has enough to pay off his debts. Does he? No, he bets it. And then you're like, he's gonna lose it. He's gonna lose the money. But then he wins.
Then he wins,
and he becomes a millionaire, and he's gonna be able to pay everyone who he owes money, and then he gets killed immediately.
Yep, shot in the face.
And it's like, Phil doesn't even kill him for the money.
No, he just kills him because he's so angry.
He's just mad that they had to sit in that stupid door. But also, you're like, you're just a goon.
You're a goon.
But then he killed his boss.
Yep. It's really intense. There's this scene that's also, like, full throttle. The scene where it's kind of funny whenever he's fighting with Garnet and from through the window door or whatever, and like they can't get the door to open.
Yeah, because the door's messed up.
The door's messed up, and they're screaming at each other, and it's really funny. But I know. You're also, at the same time, it's like, oh man,
this movie is so incredibly stressful. Like everyone is just screaming all the time. Without stopping. No one ever stops screaming. Mm-hmm. And every little thing, and it's like, I think it's realistic in a way.
Yeah, definitely.
Like, you've got this, like, highballing Jewish man with, like, a very Jewish family, Jewish wife, Jewish in-laws, who owns, like, a high business, who's dealing constantly with celebrities and people that have really large egos, and they're coming in, and they're impatient and he's impatient and mm-hmm. he's trying to make sales, and it's like nobody that works with him like respects him. Like it's just constantly like everyone is fighting.
Yeah, everyone's just on like the thinnest thread
all the time. And it's like it's just like Howard is on the thinnest thread.
Yeah,
he does not handle things well at all. He freaks out so fast.
Oof.
It is just such an intense movie.
This is how I win.
This is how I win. Oh, that's a great scene, too.
That is a great scene.
Where he keeps trying to be like, I don't think you should bet that money. And then he's like, this is how I win. And he's like, okay, buddy. I love that, like, Kevin keeps trying to be like, I just don't know. And then he's like, but do you hear me? But then, also, I think it's really great after he gets shot. And he's lying there in a puddle of his own blood, and Kevin's being interviewed by the reporter.
Yeah.
And he's basically repeating what he told him,
mm-hmm.
what Adam Sandler's character told him, what Howard told him. Probably because he thinks Howard's watching. And it's like...
But he's dead.
And also he's dead for the... Here's the thing, too. It's like, all the times that man should have been killed and wasn't killed.
Exactly.
And then the minute he can finally actually get himself out of the hole...
He can actually get his life together.
He can't, right?
Yeah.
But that's the thing, though. I think it's what's interesting is he can't get it together.
It's like the futility of it.
Yeah, almost. And it's like, even if he did get that money, it's like, would he have given it to Arno? Or would he have just...
Bet it again because he's a gambling addict?
Exactly. Or would he just have bet it again? Or would he have spent it? Or would he have given it to his girl? Like, who knows? What yeah. You know what I mean? He clearly has no control because multiple times he had enough money to pay him and didn't.
And, yeah, just didn't.
He also has so many things he could sell or pawn.
Every time they, like, point out his watches, they're always like, you have, like, these watches, why aren't you paying me back?
That it's kind like, of yeah, stuff. It's like you could pawn your stuff and pay him back in, like, a day. Like, you have enough.
And they have a house. That like, their house is so nice. They have an apartment in the city.
He has a separate apartment. It's like, you could do so much. But that's the thing, is he doesn't want to. He wants to live this, like, high baller life. He has no. And it's like, even if he got out of the hole here. Even if he did pay him back and he got out of the hole, $1 million would not last that guy long.
True.
If he can just spend $100,000 like it's nothing, $1 million is not going to last him a long time.
Yeah.
So, he would need to be pretty rich to live the kind of life he wants to live.
Oh, that scene whenever they're on the car and they're heading home and he's like, I need to stop by the apartment. And she's like, oh... You need to stop by the apartment, like, thinking that he's, like, coming home and leaving her and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, and then he has to bring his, they bring his kid up there.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
And they keep, he's like, oh, my bathroom's messed up because of the construction.
But it's not, it's.
He's just afraid she'll be in there.
Yeah.
That she won't have left. I was like, couldn't you have come back tomorrow? You could have.
Yeah.
You just were like, ah, oh, it's more convenient because we're already out here. It's your mistress.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. In some ways, I'm like, okay, here's the thing. Howard is obviously a piece of shit.
Obviously.
But in some ways, I'm like, she can't be mad that you have a mistress because you guys are getting divorced.
Yeah. But how long before?
Did he have her, yeah.
Did he have a mistress before they were decided like, they were going to get a divorce?
Also, it's like, you can't have a mistress and ask for me back.
Right? Like, you can't say, let's give our marriage another shot.
Yeah.
While you still
have a mistress. I also don't understand why. He doesn't seem like he likes her.
I know, he doesn't. And she obviously hates him.
I know.
Honestly, and why would you want to be with someone you
the
hate?
The scene where she literally laughs in his face is like, I think you are the most annoying person I've ever met, and I hate you.
And I don't even want to look at you.
She's like, and if I had my way, I would never see you again. And he's like, you're just angry right now. I think that is such a good scene.
It is a great scene.
Idina Menzel is amazing.
Yeah, she's really good in this. Everyone's really good in this movie, I think.
Yeah.
I really like all the actors.
I also find it amazing that, like, none of his family realizes that he's a gambling addict.
Right?
I'm like, how can you not tell? The only person who knows is Arno.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, Arno.
I feel bad for him.
Honestly. I feel bad for him, too.
I mean...
The scene where he's...
Being a loan shark is never good.
The scene where he's watching him being put in the trunk and he's, like, almost crying.
I know, because he's so upset because this is...
That's his, like, brother-in-law.
And they're close, too. Yeah. Like, they are close.
Yeah.
And then the other thing, too, is, like, he clearly likes him and sucks. And then also when he does finally win $1 million, you can tell he's so happy because he doesn't have to do anything to him. And when he kills him, he's like, why did you do that? Why did you do that?
Oh, it's my so God. Sad. Oh, my God. It's so sad.
Yeah. And also, I thought he was going to have cancer.
Oh, my gosh. Me, too.
But he didn't have cancer. And I was like, oh, my God. What's happening? I was like, is he going to get... This whole movie is just like, there's so much going on. I thought maybe he had hemorrhoids.
Yeah.
Originally.
I don't know, man. This movie is so intense, though.
Yeah. From start to finish.
Yeah. It
Oh, and then at the end, up. At the end, we go... Back through his body, back through the gem,
yep,
into space.
As you do.
With that weird music playing. Honestly, the music is so out of place. But this entire movie, honestly, this movie, if I had to describe it, I would say loud.
Yeah.
Very loud.
Everything about it's pretty loud.
I liked this movie quite a bit. I don't know if I ever want to watch it again, though.
Yeah.
And I don't know if I would ever ask someone that's, like, very easily made anxious to watch it.
Definitely.
I've seen multiple reviews that just describe this as, like, having a panic attack for 2 hours.
I think that's probably how Howard feels.
Probably. Probably. It's so intense. I mean, I think the idea is it's supposed to make you very, like, anxious.
Yeah.
Which it definitely does.
Yeah, I think it goes into, like, what... kind of being a gambling addict is like, yeah. And like how that makes you feel, how you're kind of on edge all the time
because you have like so many balls in the air. Constant highs and constant lows, yeah. And constantly just juggling stuff, yeah. To make it work and height and lying and sneaking. It's so, it's just so intense. Ugh.
Yes.
Adam Sandler does great.
He did a great job. I have seen him in one other dramatic role. It was a 9/11 movie.
Oh.
It was very sad. He was very good. I remember him being very good in it, but this is better, and yeah. He's excellent.
I saw him in Punch Drunk Love, and I thought that was good.
I need to watch that.
Some people don't like it. It's very, halved, I think. Very okay. Polarizing. I like it. I think he did a good job. I think Adam Sandler's a good dramatic actor.
I think so, too.
I think writing is important to Adam Sandler. I think if writing is not good, he is not good. Because, I mean, mainly the movies that are bad are his comedies, right? Like,
yeah, the ones that he's like, these are mine.
I haven't seen too many, like, drama movies that he's been in that have been bad. He also hasn't done that many, though. But his comedies, some of them are pretty good, mm-hmm. But generally not the ones written by him.
Yeah.
Generally, movies that he writes are not good. Generally, movies that he produces are not good.
Mm-hmm.
But I think he's a good actor. I think he's a really good actor, but I think sometimes he's not good at telling what is good writing.
Yeah.
Because sometimes he does movies, and I'm like, he's really committing to this,
mm-hmm.
But this is a bad movie.
You shouldn't be committing to this.
It's like, it's not him that's really bad about it. I mean, it's more just the fact that he agreed to do it.
Yeah.
It's like Jack and Jill, okay? It's probably one of the worst movies I've ever seen in my life.
It's terrible. It's horrific.
It's horrific. We should definitely cover it sometime.
Yeah, we'll do it on Patreon sometime.
It's horrific. But, like, he's very committed. He does the job. And he does it the best anyone could do it, I think.
Yeah.
But the writing is so
But it
so
should bad. Not have been done in the first place.
But it should never have been made. And I think Adam Sandler can do it.
Have you seen Funny People?
No.
It's a Judd Apatow movie. And you know how he typically casts Paul Rudd as, like, his stand-in for himself? Mm-hmm. I think in this movie he casts more of a Adam Sandler as that, and Leslie Mann plays the romantic interest, and Seth Rogen is in it.
Is it good?
It's very funny and sad. And that's it's also kind of, it's a dramedy.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like a drama about comedians, basically.
Okay.
Is what it is.
I love that.
Yeah, really interesting. And it's very sad. It's about divorce and falling out of love and stuff. And he's really good in it.
Nice. See, Adam Sandler, I'm taking the stance that Adam Sandler is a good actor.
I agree.
But he's bad at knowing good writing. And that he gets lucky sometimes. And or... he just doesn't care and is like, this movie will be easy to make and will make me money.
Listen, I've said this for a long time, and I really admire Adam Sandler's ability to make movies specifically in vacation spots.
Because he's like, I'm not filming in that crappy shithole location.
I want to film in Hawaii. And he's filmed like 3 movies in Hawaii.
And they're like, okay, Adam. Listen, honestly, 50 First Dates, though.
That's a great movie. I love that movie. He and Drew Barrymore are like so good together.
I know.
They have great chemistry. Have you seen Blended? That's in like...
No, I haven't seen all of it.
That's another one where it's like they go to Africa. Yeah. It's another vacation movie. And it's also very good because they have excellent chemistry together.
And Drew Barrymore knows when to say yes.
That's very true.
So we only...
She said yes to Donnie Darko, and she is the reason it exists today.
Which is such a gift.
She, whenever they lost funding, she was like, I'll do it. I'll pay for it.
She was like, I like this movie. Her and Rashida Jones. Rashida Jones just will produce anything. I love it. I literally love it. Because if I ever want to make a movie, I'm going to be like, I want Rashida Jones on my... She knows good movies, baby. She just, like, loves putting her money on them, too.
I love that.
Let's talk about Adam Sandler's productions.
Okay.
He loves casting his friends.
Let me look. I want to look at the ones he's written. I actually don't know he's written and what films he has.
What is it? His Happy Madison, is that what it is?
Yeah.
Called his Happy Madison Productions.
Writing credits.
He only cast his friends and, like, he has single-handedly ruined their career.
Oh, yeah, no.
It's nice that you, like, give your friends jobs, but also, like, all your friends cannot get any other jobs because they do jobs for you.
So true. Yeah, David Spade is trying to get away, I think. He's trying to get away with the wrong Missy that he made with Lauren Lapkus.
Mm. Yeah, David Spade, Kevin James. Oh, who else is in those movies usually? That guy from The Hangover.
What?
No, not The Hangover.
Not The Hangover.
I'm just thinking about, what is his name? I don't know his name.
Okay, Adam Sandler, I will say he co-wrote The Waterboy.
That was good. See,
that was a good one. That was my childhood. I watched that a lot as a kid.
He's had some good ones.
He's a co-writer on a lot of these classic Adam Sandler films.
He wrote Transylvania 2. Hotel Transylvania
2. He wrote the whole thing?
By himself?
What?
Hotel Transylvania 2? Just the second one? Grown Ups 2, Jack and Jill, yeah. Look, it just says written by...
Weird. Yeah, I don't know. He is a really interesting guy. But
Chris Rock.
Yeah, Chris Rock. He always casts his friends, and now they can't get any other jobs.
It's sad. It's kind of sad. 8 Crazy Nights, Little Nicky. He did good on Saturday Night Live. Big Daddy's good.
Yeah, that's with...
That's a good movie.
Cole Sprouse.
Probably both.
Yeah. Probably both.
Then it's all like, yeah, he honestly hasn't written that many.
Yeah, I think he's co-writer on a lot of things, but...
He did write Jack and Jill. He did write Grown Ups.
And that is what means something.
He did write You Don't Mess With the Zohan.
So, I'm gonna say it. He's a bad writer.
He's a good writer when other good writers are in the room.
Yeah, I feel like during SNL, like... writing parties.
Did you know that Adam Sandler was one of the producers on The Wrong Missy?
Really? I didn't know that.
So once again, his friends. Let's see what else. Sandy Wexler. Have not seen that.
I haven't seen that either.
The Do-Over. That looks really bad.
Looks really bad.
Hotel Transylvania 2! Just the second one.
Joe Dirt 2. Pixels. Oh my god, Pixels is so bad.
Paul Blart Mall Cop 2.
Did he produce that?
He produced it.
No, he didn't. That's it.
Both of them are him, I'm pretty sure. Blended Grown Ups 2. Here Comes the Boom. That's that one about the teacher that takes up pro wrestling.
No.
With Kevin James, yeah.
Adam Sandler.
He produced Hotel Transylvania also. But he co-wrote, or at least, or he was on the writing staff of Hotel Transylvania 2.
Interesting.
He produced Jack and Jill. That means he wrote it, thought it was a good enough idea that he produced it, and he starred in it.
He committed to it.
Yeah.
I feel like it's his baby.
It's sad, truly.
It's a terrible film.
Zookeeper, Just Go With It, Grown Ups, Rules of Engagement, Paul Blart Mall Cop. I'll say Paul Blart Mall Cop 1.
Not the worst thing I've ever seen.
Not the worst thing I've ever seen. Paul Blart Mall Cop 2.
The worst thing I've ever seen.
The worst thing I've ever seen. Really, Bedtime Stories, that was good.
That was cute. I loved that as a kid.
The House Bunny, that's a good movie.
That's a good movie. You Don't Mess With Zohan's terrible.
Yeah, Strange Wilderness. I Now Pronounce You Chuck and Larry.
Weird.
People liked that in its time. Click.
Allison has some feelings about Click.
I kind of love Click.
She always says, it's so sad.
It's so weird. It's weirdly sad. It has such a sad scene in it. It gets really sad. But also,
it's based on an old wives' tale.
What? About a remote that can freeze time?
No, about a ball of yarn that you pull the twine or the yarn and like years pass.
Oh, I like that in Click. Spoiler alert for Click.
we're gonna do it sometime.
2006. Spoiler alert. I like that he gets the remote in the Beyond section of Bed Bath and Beyond. He finds the Beyond section.
Yes, yes, I know the joke. I am familiar.
That is genius.
Have you seen the sketch that he and Pete Davidson did where they made the rap video?
No.
I'm going to show it to you after we finish this. Just needed to make a mental note of that.
Okay. That is a hilarious joke. The Beyond.
No, it is. It's a really good joke. Walken is in that scene,
I know.
Too.
Exactly. He did not write on Uncut Gems, did he?
I do not think so.
I don't think so either.
I think the Safdie brothers just wrote it.
And they were like, Adam Sandler, we're giving you a chance to redeem your career right here.
And they kind of did.
They did. I mean, it got him, I think, an Oscar nod, at least.
No.
No?
They completely cut him out because they said he wasn't a real actor.
That's right. Him and J-Lo.
No. I think that this is Oscar worthy.
At least Oscar nomination worthy. Do I think he should have won? Not really. I think he should have at least gotten a nom?
Yeah. Yeah. Probably.
I think so.
It was really good.
I think so.
I think this should have probably gotten a best original screenplay nod too, but I don't think it did.
I
don't think it got anything either.
What were the best actor?
We all know that best original screenplay, if it had not gone to Jojo Rabbit, should have gone to Midsommar, but Midsommar wasn't
Midsommar
even on the
docket.
Also
was
completely shut out.
Completely shut out. Well, who? I'm trying to find that. What were the Oscar noms for Best Actor? Okay, it was Antonio Banderas for Pain and Glory, Leonardo DiCaprio for Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, Adam Driver for Marriage Story, Joaquin Phoenix for Joker, and Jonathan Pryce for The Two Popes. Honestly, I'm sorry, Antonio Banderas, and I'm sorry, Jonathan Pryce, but goodbye.
Goodbye. Bye-bye.
Making room for Adam Sandler to at least get a nomination. I honestly cannot believe that Florence Pugh did not get a nomination for Midsommar.
That panic attack scene alone?
Alone. It's been revolutionary.
Like,
change culture.
It has. She's amazing.
Also, the first horror movie ever to be set in the light. Completely. No darkness.
None.
Zero. And it got nothing? The first horror movie ever to do that? I mean, maybe not the first ever, but definitely the first mainstream one ever.
Yeah.
To ever not be set in, like, a dark, to be, like, in a, not even just, like, not spooky, like, beautiful. Like, objectively beautiful.
Yeah.
Place. And it was still so terrifying, I almost threw up in the theater.
It's pretty scary. Do you want some trivia?
I would love it.
The film was inspired by the Safdie brothers' father's time working as a salesman slash runner for a man also named Howard in the Manhattan Diamond District. The Safdie brothers and their father are also Jewish and avoid basketball fans. And avid basketball fans, not avoid
basketball. They hate basketball!
They hate them! Tilda Swinton makes a cameo in the film as the voice of the auction manager on the phone. Daniel Day-Lewis praised Adam Sandler's performance in this film, and Sandler said that this is one of the highlights of his career.
Yeah.
I wouldn't really take what he has to say very seriously. Adam Sandler wore false teeth and a fake dark mole on his right cheek for the role.
Yeah.
It was Julia Fox's idea for her character to have Howard's name tattooed on her ass.
Look what I did.
Why did you do that? I don't deserve it!
Yes, you do. So good.
Howard tells his son that his neighbor acted in Good Times and Coming to America. When they knock on the door of the neighbor, it is answered by John Amos, who is indeed the father on Good Times and the father of Eddie Murphy's love interest in Coming to America.
Yep.
UC is played by real-life jeweler Maxud Agadjani, who was embroiled in a social media spat with rapper Tekashi 6ix9ine, that's what it is, 6ix9ine, that's interesting. In 2018, over a $25,000 bracelet he said that he lent to the performer and was never paid for.
6ix9ine is a pedophile.
Really?
Yeah, convicted, I believe. Obviously after this.
Wow. Wow, the house used for the exterior of Howard Radner's home is the same house used as Freddie Mercury's home in Bohemian Rhapsody.
They were like, don't tear that down, we're going to use that.
Adam Sandler's wife convinced him to take on the role after reading the screenplay and watching Good Time.
She was like, Adam, baby, you're not really the best to decide what roles you take. I'm the best to decide what roles you take.
Kevin Garnett and The Weeknd's feature film debut.
Yeah!
Let's see. Howard Ratner's jewelry store was a set built entirely for the movie.
Why have so many NBA basketball players been in so many good movies?
Right?
Airplane, Space Jam, this one.
Space Jam is one of the best movies I've ever seen.
It's really good.
It's amazing. I can't wait for the new one.
It's going to be good, hopefully.
I think so. I mean, Bugs Bunny's good.
Always. He's so good.
One of my favorite actors.
When will Bugs Bunny get the Oscar nom? Stop shunning Bugs Bunny. Fucking, they hate comedy. That's for sure.
He prescribes to the Shakespearean method of dressing up as the women characters.
I love it. Personally, he subscribes to a lot of Shakespearean acting methods, I'll tell you that. Oh boy.
What would you give this movie?
I'm 8 out of 10, maybe.
Me too. I really liked it.
It's pretty good.
I was
really stressed out watching it.
Yeah. No, it was... I really liked it.
Okay. I have two reviews.
Okay.
Is
it a good one and a bad one?
Nope. Both bad. All bad, pretty much. It has a 7.5, but I didn't see a single good rating at the top. Most of them were like, this is too loud. There is too much screaming. I don't like this. But there were several that were like, this is Adam Sandler's worst film. Bring back funny Adam Sandler. And I was like, y'all are insane.
I don't think
insane.
You understand acting.
Y'all are insane if you think this is Adam Sandler's worst. This isn't even in the top 10 Adam Sandler's worst films.
This is maybe in his top 10 best.
Literally. Almost definitely in his top 10 best. Here we go. 1 out of 10. Abandon all hope, all ye who enter the theater.
All ye.
All ye.
Not ye. Just all ye.
All ye. All ye, all y'all who enter this theater, abandon hope.
Here all y'all who enter this theater.
You know they were like, oh, this is going to be really good. This is like when you, it's like when you tweet something and it's like pretty decent, but then afterwards you're like, I should have said this instead, but yeah. Like, there's no edit button.
Oh, I hate that.
I know. Stupid Twitter. Okay. Looking for a break from people arguing over each other and the general chaos of the holidays? Well, this ain't it. It's enough to turn any sober person into an alcoholic or a Xanax pill popper. Adam Sandler's performance and portrayal of a crazed gambling addict was spot on, and it might get him an Oscar nod, but Jesus, I could not stand the character or find any redeeming qualities.
I mean, yeah.
The only good decision made in this movie was Idina Menzel's character laughing in Adam Sandler's face when he asks for her to take him back. I get that all the artsy-fartsy people love to watch chaos and people's lives fall down before them, But honestly, just save $20 and watch CNN or Fox News. Movies are supposed to entertain us, and the storytelling is supposed to teach us something. The only thing this taught us is how to waste 135 minutes of our lives. Do yourself a favor and skip it. I like that he literally is like, the acting in this is amazing. It's very chaotic, but I don't like chaos.
That's my issue with this movie.
My issue with the movie is mainly that I didn't like the idea of it.
I don't like anything about what it's trying to say.
I just want to watch Moana.
Like, with that cop-out ending.
Multiple people said, just watch Frozen 2. I was like, that's not a comparable movie to this at all. What? I was like, just skip this and go rewatch Waterboy. That's not a similar type of movie even. Okay, the next one. 1 out of 10. Please tell me when I am going to die and then kill me before that date. Uncut Gems is the worst movie ever made. Worse than a 2-minute 2001 cell phone clip that films nothing but paint drying. If digital format never came into existence, then every physical copy of it should be lit on fire and wrapped slowly around each person involved in making this pool of diarrhea that has inexplicably covered every wall of your home.
Oh, wow.
They're very specific.
They're really painting a picture.
I know. This movie has officially killed all of the joy in the world and has replaced it with F words and screaming over each other until we all reach deep into our own eye sockets to rip our own life forces out of our homo sapien flesh encasings. I have never experienced more irrational anger from anything else in my life. A lot of people I found could not explain why they didn't like this movie.
They couldn't articulate it?
Because there's nothing really wrong with it. It's more just the general vibe made them feel bad. And I don't think they liked it. It seems like every review is just like, I can't tell you I didn't like this movie. Because honestly, when I break it down, every aspect is good. But I just hated it so much. Everyone's like, I would die before seeing this movie again. But also, there's nothing wrong with it. It's a really interesting dynamic.
Yeah.
That I've seen people who dislike a movie for like the wrong reasons before, or who dislike it for really stupid reasons. But everyone in this didn't know why they didn't like it. They just were like, it's a gut feeling and I don't like it.
My gut is telling me to stay away.
My gut is telling me this isn't right. I also, a lot of people mentioned how many times they said the F-bomb. And didn't this almost take the record?
Yeah, it's second only to Wolf of Wall Street.
Wolf of Wall Street. I honestly didn't even notice them saying it that much.
Me either.
If that tells, like, I guess it just tells you how desensitized I am to cursing, but
yeah,
I really didn't, I wasn't like, oh gosh, they sure do say that word a lot.
No, yeah, I wasn't like that either. Frankly, I wasn't like that in Wolf of Wall Street either.
I really don't, I guess
maybe we're just desensitized.
Maybe. I also feel like I just use it as a describing word.
Yeah.
I just feel like it's good to describe things. So, I guess I just don't notice it when it just slips in so casually.
Like the adjective form? Yeah.
It's nice. I never really realize it. Yeah, I just don't think about it, I guess. Like, I guess some people who, like, never say it are probably like, wow, they're saying this a lot.
And we're like, oh, I'm like that.
It'd be like if they were saying it's, I don't know, big. I'm gonna be like, oh, so many... They're saying adjectives so much in this movie. I wouldn't think about that. I don't know. Just the difference, I guess.
Adam Sandler, stop writing. Continue working with A24.
Adam, it's time for you to stop writing. It's time for you to continue acting more.
Yes.
And maybe also ask your wife more things.
Ask her opinion.
It seems like she knows.
Seems like she knows something that maybe you don't know.
Maybe David Spade would know. I don't know. I'm just throwing it out there.
All right, guys.
Well, yep, that's it.
Thank you for listening.
Thanks. Follow
Bye.
Oh, wait, no. Follow us on Patreon.
Bye. Bye.